Now for agribusiness news, markets, and weather from Studio C, this is Agriculture Today.
In terms of the auto manufacturers, I went to Detroit at the end of April and met with some of the OEMs and got a better understanding of sort of the apex of the flex fuel vehicle manufacturing and the fact that it's sort of slid off. They've said that some of that is due to tax credit policy and other kinds of things. So I have to say I'm just beginning to get a little bit up to speed onto their perspective, what's happening on the manufacturing side and what the federal government can do and what states can do. So it's a great question. I don't have a good answer for it yet.
Rod Snyder is EPA's Senior Advisor for Ag.
The investments in the EV side is certainly enormous. We all know that. But there's a long tail in terms of the transition within the transportation sector. This is not going to happen overnight, and we're going to have liquid transportation fuels around for a long time, certainly within my lifetime. So, we recognize as an agency that we need to move these things together.
You're listening to Agriculture Today.
Recently, I had the opportunity to chat with U.S. Grains Council President and CEO Ryan LeGrand about the export exchange and the current state of the export market for both DDGs and ethanol from the United States. He says exports of U.S. ethanol are now improving after the drop during COVID.
We're doing pretty well. Exports of ethanol took a real hit during the pandemic. We lost our driving demand. We lost the price advantage that we had over gasoline and aromatics and MTBE. But all that has come back. The driving demand's back, our price advantage is back, and we're seeing exports starting to rebound. Before the pandemic, we were sitting at about 1.5 to 1.6 billion gallons of exports. That dropped to the 1.2, 1.3 neighborhood. Now we're rebounding to about 1.5 again, and this year going to set the second largest export total on record.
Coming up in October, we have the export exchange, which we haven't had for a while. I think 2018 was the last one. So tell us about that event, how the U.S. Grains Council is involved with ethanol industries, ethanol groups to make that event happen.
Yes, we're very excited to be having that event. First time, as you mentioned, since 2018. We're going to be back in Minneapolis, which I think maybe where we were in 2018. And this is really our flagship buyer-seller event where we bring in around 300 buyers. It may not be that many this year, but typically we'll bring 300 buyers in from 20 plus countries to meet with our sellers, with our agribusiness members that are exporting these products. And a lot of business gets done. It's done in a trade show type format where our agribusinesses have booths and opportunities to get in front of these customers. And we're just so excited to be having it again. And we know that it's going to pay dividends in terms of sales of U.S. feed grains.
And that conference is really not that old, right?
Well, it depends on how you look at it.
So
it's every other year. So I did a one-year stint at the Grains Council in 2006, and I was lucky enough to be part of the team that formed the first, we call it the DDG Buyers Conference. So that was kind of the precursor to actual Export Exchange. This event with the name of Export Exchange, there hadn't been a whole lot of them.
How do you think that event has helped the market for DDGs grow worldwide?
Oh, I think it's helped tremendously. While we're over here, we don't just do the buyer-seller matchups, but we take these folks to ethanol plants to see the production firsthand. We bring speakers in to talk about increasing the inclusion rates for distiller's grains and how to better utilize our corn and our sorghum in their rations. So I think it's extremely helpful from not only just a networking perspective and sales perspective, but the technical part of it.
Why is it so important for the Grains Council to be involved with the ethanol industry on exports?
Well, ultimately, we're working for the U.S. farmer, and the ethanol industry has really transformed the rural landscape and the demand picture for the U.S. farmer. And so a number of years ago, we were asked to make a pivot to start promoting ethanol globally. And we gladly accepted the challenge. And I've been very proud of our team and all of our stakeholders that have just really got on board with working. And those stakeholders include ACE, mm-hmm, right here. They've been instrumental in helping us promote ethanol globally. And also, Growth Energy and RFA have played a big role in everything that we're doing globally. And we're happy to have the entire ethanol industry on one team, everyone getting behind the idea that we need to push the excess out of the country and improve everyone's bottom lines.
I'm Cindy Zimmerman.
Thanks, Cindy. Once again, Export Exchange 2022 in Minneapolis, Minnesota, October 12th through the 14th. It's Agriculture Today.
Ag News Now. Agriculture Today.
Yesterday, the Finance Committee announced a hearing for Doug McKell. He's the nominee to be chief ag negotiator at the USTR.
That's Iowa Senator Chuck Grassley.
The hearing is going to be on September the 7th. I expect this nominee will be voted out of committee favorably. I think he's well qualified. And most importantly, to speed it along, we badly need new leadership in this position. We still do not have a confirmation hearing for another very important trade position. Alex Taylor, an Iowan, has been nominated to lead the U.S. Department of Agriculture's trade mission under the title of Undersecretary for Trade. More than one in five jobs in Iowa depends on international trade. That isn't just agriculture trade, that'd be all trade. And, of course, Iowa is a top exporter of soybeans, corn, and pork. Iowa farmers depend on trade, and I've had multiple conversations during my town halls with farmers who are concerned about the lack of aggressiveness in pursuing free trade agreements by this administration. 19 months into this administration is far too long for these key roles to not be filled, meaning the trade roles that I've talked about. These roles need to be filled so that they can advocate for Iowa farmers and our rural economy.
Grassley's been back home in Iowa meeting with farmers.
What I'm hearing from farmers is on the farm bill, they want to make sure that we maintain the crop insurance program when we write a new farm bill next year. And on trade, they are interested in whether China is going to continue buying under phase one because they didn't fulfill their obligations. And I said, I think they're going to continue to buy a lot of food from us because they are going to always import food because they don't have enough arable land to feed their 1/4 billion people. But I don't think they're doing it from the standpoint of keeping up their obligations under the Trump phase one agreement that they were going to buy about $80 billion of agriculture products over a two-year period of time. They probably bought about 55 or 60 billion, I believe, but not 80 billion. And then I also hear from them about the trade generally that we don't have trade agreements.
USTR Ambassador Catherine Tai has been in Iowa and said that the administration struggles from tariffs.
One, they aren't doing anything on free trade agreements that would reduce tariffs generally. The other thing is, if they're talking about tariffs that Trump put on, it doesn't seem to me they're anxious to take them off, particularly with China, because they said that there were going to be a tool that we use to negotiate more favorable agreements with China, but they aren't even negotiating with China. So I don't think there's much progress, and the extent to which they are raising questions about what Trump did on tariffs, it'd be pretty easy for them, if they don't like them, to take them off, and they aren't doing it.
It's Agriculture Today.
With Agriculture Today, here's Tony St. James.
Well, on the Fed side, we held 146 through Friday. Still a very relatively strong cash price by historical standards. Quite a bit of a spread still between Southern and Northern Plains. Not sure if that will work itself out here through the end of the year or not, but still overall that five-year price still very strong for steers and heifers.
Caitlin McCulloch, Director, Livestock Marketing Information Center.
On the cash side for feeder cattle, your Dodge City auction had a pretty wide spread so far in August. So if you look at 5 to 550 weights or 5 to 600 weights, that's about a $20 spread between this week and last week. So it looks like the 550s came down about $20 a hundredweight, and the 550 to 6s came up about $10. So a little bit of choppiness in that area. When you flip back to the 7 to 8s, Those held actually relatively firm around 178, so up a little bit from the previous week, which was closer to 175. But still pretty strong prices you're looking at across the feeder cattle auctions as well.
On futures trade.
The Fed cattle futures ended last week up a little bit. Some pretty good highs closed in for that December contract. And if you flip forward to 2023, all of those were in the green. Feeder cattle did lose a little bit of ground. Corn ended the week up a little bit when they lost, about half a dollar per hundredweight or so, and most of the deferred contracts a little bit less than that August-September contract. But generally speaking, throughout the year, you're looking at feeder cattle prices on the board. It's still in the high 180s from now to the end of the year and even getting a little bit better after that. So very, very promising prices there.
Box beef?
Very quiet week last week. We've held at this 265, 264 range, so not a lot of excitement. One thing we like to look at is the spread between different quality grades, and you're seeing that prime value across the rib and loin primals really pop up as we head into that fourth quarter. That's where that spread usually really elongates from like a branded product or a choice product. And so that's giving me, I guess, optimism towards the beef market heading into the fourth quarter, that we still aren't seeing maybe a drag on consumer demand because of these high prices.
And recapping the cattle on feed report.
Up a little bit, 11.2 million, about 200,000 head higher than a year ago. Probably the biggest surprise or takeaway was that placements were actually up in July. So most of the pre-report analysts were thinking that it was going to be below a year ago. That pre-report average was closer to about 1% down. And a lot of that's factoring in drought placements. If you look across the southern plains, we only get a handful of states in terms of the cattle on feed report. But generally speaking, placements were more than 20% higher than a year ago in the state of South Dakota and Oklahoma. Strong growth in Texas, though, up 7%. And if you look across the weight breakdowns, that's only available for four states, Texas, Nebraska, Kansas, and Colorado. Compared to a year ago, total U.S. placements were about 410,000 versus 375 last year for under 600 pounds. Texas, though, that was about a 30,000 head bump from a year ago. In the 6 to 699 category for the U.S. sat at about 280,000 compared to 255 last year. Only about a 5,000 head bump in Texas that year. But I definitely think that increase in placements, we were thinking it was going to be a little bit closer to a year ago. So strong numbers still coming in there. That has to be because of the dryness you've seen. But as I hear it, you guys are expecting a little bit of rain in the coming weeks, and hopefully that'll help out some of that region.
It's Agriculture Today.
You're listening to Agriculture Today.
We're here with Brian Jennings, CEO of the American Coalition for Ethanol, and wrapping up the 35th annual conference here in Omaha. How do you think it went, Brian?
We're really delighted, Cindy, with how it went. I think the audience, the members in attendance were enthusiastic about, frankly, where the industry is going, coming off of a couple of tough years. Lots of opportunities on the horizon, certainly plenty of challenges as well, but good, strong attendance and feeling really good about it.
Yeah, you're back to pre-COVID attendance, right?
Yeah, I love that. Let's erase the COVID memory and go back to how it used to be.
Let's get back to normal. Well, what are some of the highlights of the conference for you?
Oh, so many. I mean, the governor of Nebraska really kicked things off, I think, with a bang and helped people, understand that they, I love how he ended his remarks by, you have to be persistent. You have to be persistent. And this is an industry that doesn't have the size and the scale of maybe the fossil fuel sector, but we've scored some important victories over the course of time, and it's because we have had to be persistent. I'm really happy with the feedback we've received, frankly, Cindy, from ethanol producers and farmers who like the climate, the carbon emphasis. I think we're trying to be, candid and honest with our members that climate comes with the cost for businesses, for ethanol producers and for farmers. But if we can fashion these policies in a way that also create a market that returns value to them, we're hopeful that the return on that investment is worth it. And so we're just trying to, really promote the credentials of corn ethanol as a low-carbon fuel and make sure our members, whether they're farmers or ethanol producers, are able to monetize what they do make money, you know, helping clean up the environment.
Yeah, you're not a charity, so you do have to make money. Well, you also had Rod Snyder with the EPA here, and he talked about one of your first priorities, which is E15. And what do you think where do you think we're going to go with that at this point?
Yeah, first of all, really grateful Rod Snyder with EPA came to this event. He has a tough job to be the conduit between U.S. agriculture and the EPA, because there's a lot of things that EPA does that agriculture doesn't particularly like. But I found his remarks to be very positive. And, you know, on the E15 front, I'm going to read between the lines a little bit. I think Rod was careful with what he could say, but I believe EPA will move forward at some point this fall. I was thinking it's this month, but I think it'll be, you know, late summer, early fall with a rulemaking to allow these 8 or 9 Midwestern states to permanently sell E15. And he said very clearly publicly to our group that EPA intends to finalize that rulemaking before the 2023 driving season, which is exactly what we need. No interruption in that market access. And so, you know, we'll be following up with EPA to make sure that they kind of get that done. But I'm really encouraged that at least in these, you know, key Midwestern states, we certainly could have E15 year-round.
At the 35th Annual ACE Conference in Omaha, I'm Cindy Zimmerman.
Thanks, Cindy. Finally, American Trucking Association's seasonally adjusted for-hire truck tonnage index fell over 1% in the month of July after rising just over 0.5% in June. The tonnage declined sequentially in July for only the second time during the last 12 months. But despite the dip from June, the American Trucking Association says tonnage remains at elevated levels and increased significantly from a year earlier. It's Agriculture Today.
Ag News Now. Agriculture Today.
We're in a recession.
Iowa Senator Chuck Grassley.
And when it comes to some of the good things in this bill that I would support, you don't spend more money when you're in a recession. Now, it's obviously, at least until Congress does something to change it, and maybe a Republican Congress would change some of the bad things that are in this bill. But until then, they're going to spend the money. And I think when you have the biodiesel tax credit, how can I find fault with that? How can you find fault with the money for the infrastructure for other biofuels and hopefully even year-round E15? Those are all things that I favored. Their benefit to the Iowa economy, the corn growers, soybean people, and the ethanol biofuels industries of Iowa. So I can't find fault with them, but it's still a fact. There's two things about this bill that are wrong. Number one, we're in a recession, and there's a rule, and we're in a recession because of 2 weeks or 2 quarters of an economic downturn. You don't raise taxes during a recession. And then when you have inflation, the rule of thumb is you don't spend more money.
Has concerns with the Inflation Reduction Act.
Number one, because the tax increase on corporations, according to the National Manufacturers Association, is going to cause 217,000 people to lose their job, and you shouldn't be having public policy that makes corporations lay off people that they wouldn't otherwise lay off. And then in regard to the 87,000 employees of the IRS, you know, the IRS brags about their, and this administration brags about, that they're going after the high-income people and they're going after the corporations. So then why are you putting more people on to go after, I presume to go after smaller business and middle-class Americans? And when you do that, it's kind of an intimidation factor to get people to pay. When you send them a bill for $1,000 or $5,000, they'll pay it instead of hiring a lawyer. You don't want to mess around with the IRS. You just get them off your back. And that's the sort of intimidation that we don't want. The government shouldn't be playing in that area.
And why it misses the mark on lowering food cost.
When you're fighting inflation, you don't fight part of inflation. And so if you're going to go after lowering food prices, you'd go after what's causing food prices to rise. And when you consider so much in food, because the margins at the supermarkets are always within 1 or 2%, when you go to the cost of the price rise, you immediately go to this government's policy on energy of no pipelines, no drilling, less fracking, and don't loan monies to banks, don't loan money to energy companies. This has caused diesel to be $5. And I'll give you an example. A guy that spreads, has contracts to spread fruits and vegetables throughout the country, says his prices went up 7.5%, but of that 7.5 percentage points, 6 points of it was directly related to diesel. So if we get the price, if we get energy down to a reasonable price, you can see that's going to have a big impact on the price of food.
It's Agriculture Today.
With Agriculture Today, here's Tony St. James.
It really isn't doing much for those acres that were failed previous to the event.
Recent rains, beneficial, but probably won't improve the cotton crop. Sean Wade with Plains Cotton Growers.
Some of the acres that had really kind of already shut themselves down, they're still out there in the field. They haven't been released by insurance or whatnot, haven't been looked at quite yet. But they really don't have much potential. I mean, I'm looking at a dryland corner here at a field day, and there's just not much there on these plants. They're 6-7 inches tall, and this rainfall is not going to help them really at all. But like I said, those irrigated crops that we've been nursing through the summer, and a lot of folks over the last couple of weeks, had maybe turn some water off or down on some of that. Because the forecast honestly just didn't look like it was going to be very favorable. This rainfall should, maybe help them finish whatever potential they've got, finish that out, and hopefully, add a few pounds to the total on those fields. Every pound is going to be important this year, for our gins and warehouses and all of our allied industry folks. We need to try and get as much of this cotton harvested that's worth harvesting. Get it into a bale and get it onto the market. As we saw in the USDA report, this is going to be a pretty short crop, not just in Texas, but across the belt. And, it's just not quite, the crop that maybe everybody would hope for, with prices at these levels. But, it is what it is, and we will, we're going to get through it. And hopefully, like I said, this rainfall will kind of help us finish out the crop that we have and maximize whatever potential does exist out there.
And USDA has tried to stay in front of it.
Back at the beginning of the summer, we saw the release of the first round of applications for the Emergency Relief Program, the ERP program. And this would be phase one of that program that was approved by Congress last fall to cover losses that producers incurred in 2020 and 2021 growing seasons. Earlier in the year, during the first part of this phase one rollout, producers were able to make application and look at those benefits for pretty much all of the 2020 crop losses that they may have documented. But some producers still had some outstanding crop insurance programs that hadn't been quite settled, specifically the Stacked Income Protection Program, STACs, the Supplemental Coverage Option and Enhanced Coverage Option endorsements that are available to cotton producers and grain producers as well. Those insurance endorsements don't actually settle up until basically this last July, this past month, as we've gotten through, all of the crop reporting and calculations that needed to be done. So now that those insurance policies have been paid and settled, growers that had a 2021 loss, that they may be eligible for benefits under the ERP, should be receiving any day now, a round of pre-filled out applications that include information downloaded from the federal crop insurance servers, take care of any of those outstanding 2021 crop losses that may have been kind of waiting to be processed. And then once that's completed, then we'll go into phase two, which is going to be the point where producers that didn't actually have a crop insurance loss but still had a loss below the ERP trigger points would be able to make applications under phase two. So that's still, a month or two down the road, we expect. But something that producers are watching very carefully. And it's, just programs that are taking up the time of our county FSA folks.
It's Agriculture Today.
This is Agriculture Today.
A lot's been written about the new Inflation Reduction Act's climate change programs, but there are also other features of that law.
In terms of lower health care costs for many, many Americans, senior citizens, a significant percentage of which live in rural America.
Agriculture Secretary Tom Vilsack telling reporters the other day that the new law may make financial life a little easier for seniors.
Because we're going to be able to cap the amount that seniors will pay for prescription drugs to no more than $2,000 a year.
Vilsack says that's a big deal. He told us he was at an event the other day talking to a woman who told him
that she was purchasing medication that she needed to keep her alive. The cost of the medication every 3 months was $9,000. And out of her pocket, she had to pay about $2,500. So over the course of a year, she had to pay $10,000 just for one medication. This bill is basically going to provide a savings to that individual.
And if it's insulin that's needed, the law caps the cost at no more than $35 for a month's supply. Gary Crawford, Washington.